Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical, underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of NASCAR Coast to Coast right here on the Motor Racing Network, where we dive into all things NASCAR regional and talk to some of the up-and-comers and the newsmakers in the regional ranks in NASCAR. Of course, my name is Chris Wilner, MRN Pit Reporter from MRN HQ for the final time. We'll get to that in a little bit. Kyle Ricci, MRN announcer out there in Connecticut. Busy bee, Kyle, and I'll be seeing you three-dimensionally coming up this week when we go to Texas Motor Speedway. But how was your weekend? You got to spend it out at the Icebreaker. Did the ice officially break up there in Connecticut?
No. I mean, it has since. It's 70 degrees today, but over the weekend, we had snow, we had hail, we had high winds, and I think we had a high temperature on Sunday of about 46 degrees. So, I mean, not horrible, but it was cold. It was really cold. The wind made it feel like it was in the 30s. I mean, it wasn't very pleasant, but they got most of the event in, including the NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour race. And, you know, it was a good show, good crowd that came out, and, hopefully things warm up from here.
It's the one of the very few times that the race car drivers prefer to be in their fire suits in the race car, because it's at least a little bit warmer than the folks in the stands. Looked like a great time. And boy, we're going to get to that plus a ton more here on this week's episode. Of course, we had a full short track weekend, whether you're talking about the NASCAR National Series and some of our regional drivers that are regional graduates that were performing well at the Martinsville Paperclip over the weekend. Of course, the Ground Pounders, as Kyle mentioned, late models and everything else. Chris Wright joins us to talk all things ARCA and the fact he's also going to make his Tricon Garage debut in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series this weekend at Texas, plus a stellar debut, as we mentioned, for all of our regional drivers. We'll get into that as well, including Carson Quapel's big run at Martinsville. But Kyle, you just mentioned it. Let's start with Thompson. You were there. What did you think of the Icebreaker 150 NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour? Ron Silk, I mean, we talked about it coming in. He was probably one of the favorites, he and Justin Bonsignor. But to flex his muscle like that, except for one little blip on pit road, I would say was a pretty dominant effort by the defending champ.
No, it was. And I think we all thought Justin was going to be a little more involved in the battle for the race win, but he was not. He was so dominant there for many years. Had a good run, but nobody could stay with Ron Silk. He was the class of the field for much of the day, a very quick day with practice and qualifying, followed by the race all within a couple of hours of each other. Jake Johnson impressed me once again, driver of Old Blue, back-to-back, I think now runner-up finishes, contending for the top spot both times, running around all these NASCAR modified champions over the last decade. So Jake beginning to come into his own. First, he did it on the short tracks of New Smyrna, and then now the bigger tracks of Richmond and Thompson. And I look for him to get a win here before all is said and done.
Absolutely. It's been a stellar season, start to the season for Jake Johnson and Old Blue. For Ron Silk, 7th win there at Thompson. Again, it's been kind of the site of some of his marquee wins over the course of his career. Got his first 3 tour wins actually there over early on in his career. Let's talk about the battle with Patrick Emmerling. It was very brief, but Patrick had some choice words for Ron Silk post-race about maybe a little bit too aggressive there on that restart, moving him out of the way, and maybe even a possible jumping of the restart. I know that was a hot topic when we talked about Richmond a couple weeks ago. So what was your thought? Was it warranted, or was it just good hard racing there at the end?
It's racing at Thompson. I feel like that's kind of the way modifieds race there, no matter the division, whether it be the Tour or the SK Lite modifieds, whatever the class. We've seen it for years now. When you're on the inside, you use not just the inside, but the middle lane as well. And unfortunately, if there's somebody there, they get shoved up into the outside lane. And for Patrick, went from first, or from battling for the lead, to what, 5th or 6th there at one point, had to claw his way back into the top 5. Lucky he kept it out of the wall up in turn number 2. As far as the restart was concerned, I mean, I didn't see. I think we're kind of got the microscope under restarts now at all levels after what happened with Denny 10 days or so ago at Richmond. It looked like a perfectly fine restart. Nothing to be concerned about there. But yeah, I can see where Patrick has been frustrated, right? He had that penalty at Richmond while battling for the lead due to the commitment cone violation. Got caught up in an incident on the ensuing restart, goes to Thompson, has a great car, and then gets shoved up into the outside lane. I mean, those are the breaks, I guess, but he recovered, had a good run.
Yeah, that's kind of one of those cases of I got beat, so now I'm frustrated, and I gotta figure out what happened. Right. But Patrick Emerling, a great run, though, finished third. Of course, he is full-time this year. Justin Bonsignor and Tyler Ripkema finished in the top five as well, so good run for Tyler. I know you're pretty familiar with him up in New England. So the next leg, though, Kyle, we got a little bit of a break. It'll be the first of the Granite State Short Track Cup series of races at Monadnock, May 4th. So just a little under a month until we get the tour back on schedule. I know a lot of those drivers pretty thankful to have a break and kind of get reset for the spring and summer stretch. Now, that wasn't all that was taking place at Thompson. Kyle, we had so many different series, whether it was the 604 crate modifieds, we had tour type modifieds as well, away from the NASCAR with a modified tour. Pass was there as well. And how about that pass race? Derek Griffiths going 2 for 2 to start the year after the Easter Bunny 150 that he won at Hickory there about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, took home the Pass Icebreaker 75 win in the super late models. I mean, another guy we talk about year in and year out racking up big wins, but I think when it comes to the past series, that's a really good start to the year.
A race that never had a rhythm. It was on Saturday. It was sleeting at one point. It was raining at one point. And, you know, just when you thought, hey, we're going to string some laps together here, the caution comes out because of weather or a spin because of, you know, damp conditions on the racetrack, and, you know, then they would park the cars. And I heard somebody say earlier this week, it was like running the race in stages, but Derek was able to stay out front most of the time. There were some other big names involved in the event. Some of the Thompson regulars, Derek Luchacki, I know, was a factor at one point in the event. But Derek Griffith has the Thompson Speedway figured out. He always runs well there, grew up in this area, and like you mentioned, has momentum on his side after finding victory lane at Hickory just a couple of weeks ago.
And worth noting, Monaco Tri-Track Series, and that you guys have a big part of up at Stafford, was postponed Saturday due to rain. So they're going to move that back all the way to October 11th and kind of make it the opener now to the 62nd Sunoco World Series of Speedway Racing at Thompson. So a little bit while longer to wait for those. So that'll kind of end the season almost for the Monaco Tri-Track Series coming up. Quickly, let's get to Cars Tour. Hickory Motor Speedway, of course, the birthplace of NASCAR stars and the birthplace of yet another stellar performance from Connor Zilich, racking up another check mark in the win column, this time on an oval for the first time in the Cars Tour Late Model Stock Series. We talked about his IMSA wins and his really pedigree rising up as one of the next stars of NASCAR. Well, he's now won a Cars Tour race, Kyle, and he did it in pretty impressive fashion.
And how much confidence will that give him? You know, we've talked to him already this year. We've talked about him on road courses, how at Watkins Glen last year, how well he did in the Arca Menard Series race. But how much confidence now will this give him, knowing that he can win on an oval and not have to worry about right-hand turns?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he even said it in his post-race interviews, like, you know, Rolex 24 and Sebring 12 and all those wins aside, I really wanted to win a late model race on an oval and to do it at Hickory amongst Brendan Butterbean Queen, who we had to rub fenders with there at the end. Obviously, we know the strength of the field as well with Deke McCaskill and some of those Chad McCombie and those other drivers. To do it that fashion was certainly a confidence booster. And I don't think he's done yet either on the late model side or, of course, when we go back ARCA racing as well. I don't think, you know, we'll be talking about him getting wins here for you know, the rest of the year to come. So Brendan Queen did finish second, McCombie third. Connor Hall, who currently leads the NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly National Championship standings with like 9 or 10 wins, he finished fourth. And Minnie Tyrell came back with a top five finish, had to kind of drive through the field. So really good stuff there. On the prolate model side of things, Kyle Campbell, 2 for 2. I think he even shocked himself that he's had this kind of start to the season, such a small family-run organization.
Yeah, and that's the key, you know, a small family-run team showing well here in the national spotlight and becoming an early favorite for the Pro Late Model Championship, part of the Cars Tour. I don't want to call it a dominant run, but he was up front, you know, all day, and of course, you know, when it counted the most there at the end.
Yeah, and that chassis was bought from the Quapples, who, of course, he's going against Caden on the Pro Late model side of things. So off to a great start is Kyle Campbell. Smart tour was at Orange County, Kyle, as we continue to roll through kind of the week that was. And Carson Lofton, again, 16 years of age, 3 wins in 5 smart races this year. Again, it came after disqualification. Unfortunately, Blake Barney had unapproved intake manifold on his engine. But at the same time, he was there to pounce and made the pass on Jimmy Blewett for what would be the win there with about 16, 17 to go. So, Annette, another impressive performance. What more can you say about this kid?
Yeah, Jimmy Blewett finishing in the second spot. But, yeah, Carson Lofton, you know, like you mentioned, 3 for 5. You know, I don't want to say he's just, you know, come out of the woodwork and surprised everyone, because we've seen him the last couple of years. Obviously, his family, a lot of history with Southern Modified Racing. You mentioned the DQ by Blake Barney early this week. The DQ was removed. The appeal was kind of overturned. He was put back in the finishing order in last, so he's going to get points. Okay. I guess the part in question was an oversight, but still marked as unapproved. I'm not sure what all that means.
We're going to need a lawyer to break all this down for us.
No disqualification, though.
Okay, so remove that asterisk, but at the same time, it looks still like a tip of, I mean, in other series, a DQ just means you're put at the tail of the field. You know, so it's, or a penalty, I guess. Maybe not DQ.
Right.
So, okay, we'll call it a penalty. Nonetheless, as a win was still stripped from him due to an unfortunate technical infraction. So, okay, we'll have to maybe dive into that some other time. But before we get to our special guest of the week, Chris Wright, of course, don't forget Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway celebrating 120 years of racing at the fairgrounds, Kyle. That is some kind of stretch when you look at short track racing. And it was Michael House passing Dawson Sutton, again, a two-time track champion, for the win. Kyle, what does Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway and just racing at the fairgrounds mean to short track? We talk about all the big races there, but NASCAR is still trying to possibly race there on the national side. So it's a big, big deal to celebrate 120 years.
And that would have been perfect for this celebration to have a NASCAR National Series event there. Unfortunately, that track has undergone so many hurdles in trying to get NASCAR back there, and hopefully it'll happen one day. But yeah, I mean, 120 years, I can't even fathom, you know, what that place looked like so many years ago. Has seen the history of motorsports, you know, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Salem Speedway, one of the oldest short tracks in the country, and obviously Nashville. So that whole region has seen so much. And I didn't realize it was 120 years old. I knew there was a lot of history at Nashville Fairgrounds, but 120 years going way back.
Yeah, 100%. And there's some passionate race fans in that Nashville area as well. And so as those discussions continue on if NASCAR can bring a national series, at the same time, the competition is still fierce, and you know, the crowd still packed that place to go watch late model racing. So really good to see Nashville Fairgrounds have a really good opener to 120 years of racing at the fairgrounds. Before we get to Chris Rice and our first break here on the show, how about Martinsville Speedway, Kyle, as we kind of wrap our short track discussion from the week that was in Carson Quapwell? I thought what was really cool is I made the drive up there on Saturday. You know, obviously our team at the Motor Racing Network was calling the race, but I wanted to just kind of walk around and kind of take everything in, more so even just as a fan, but to talk to some folks. And I sat down with Carson for a while, and you could almost see the nerves a little bit. Dale Jr. actually decided to come up and basically took Carson under his wing and pointed out during cup practice everything he needed to know, was showing him the line, showing him what they were doing on corner exit of turn two. And Carson was just a sponge soaking everything in. He's a great race car driver, but again, when you make your first Xfinity start, there's going to be some nerves there. There's some unknowns there. Didn't really show that when it came to racing on Saturday night. A great job finishing fourth. We were wondering if maybe Bubba Pollard set the bar really high. Well, Carson just said, hold my beer. I just finished in the top five. So pretty cool 2 for 2 on short track racers on their debut.
Good top five effort and a good... a good clean run. And that's hard to do at Martinsville, especially in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. We saw some pretty big incidents on restarts, especially. And, you know, he was able to avoid most of it and come away unscathed and have a good, nice top five effort. And like you mentioned, 2 weeks in a row, back to back runs between Bubba and Carson, Richmond and Martinsville, both solid performances by two drivers that I'm sure we'll see more of here going down the road.
So the question is, who's next, Dale Jr.?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait to see your new announcement for more short track racers coming up through the ranks, but good start, 2 for 2 there inside the top 10. So, and a shout out too on the truck side of things Friday night with our regional graduates. I mean, obviously Christian Eckes and that whole McAnally team, Hilgeman Racing team, have been on a roll winning their second race, but you got Ty Majeski, Nick Sanchez, Tyler Ankrum with top 5 finishes, Taylor Gray, Raja Kruth, Sammy Smith was in the truck field. He got a top 10. Hayden Honeycutt. Yep. Rallied for a top 10, and Corey Heim as well. So that just shows you the new wave of drivers starting to make their name for themselves on the national side of things. Now, Kyle, before we go to break, it was also Hendrick Motorsports' 40th anniversary at Martinsville Speedway. Obviously, obviously capped it by a, you know, history showing 1-2-3 finish for William Byron and Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott. But do you have a memory? I mean, you've been with the Motor Racing Network for quite some time and covering this sport. A memory of Martinsville and Hendrick that sticks out to you?
Probably that night Jeff Gordon won. Before the lights were installed, it was really, really dark. It came down to a late two-lap overtime finish. I forget what year it was, but it's going back a while now because it was 2013. So yeah, we'll go there. Probably that night, a memorable moment on the front straightaway, huge celebration for Jeff and his, and obviously the entire organization.
Yeah. And I mean, it was the final win and it locked him into the championship. So kind of a way to put the icing on the cake. I'm going to have to go, sadly, 2004. When we lost, you know, the fine folks on that plane crash from Hendrick, but the resiliency of the team, the emotions that followed, it kind of went from tragedy to triumph with Jimmy Johnson and kind of putting a bow on that horrible day. And kind of one of those things that, you know, you want to forget, you know, the tragedy side of that, but you also want to remember what kind of that whole team coming together and what that meant, that win met at Martinsville in 2004. I was just a little kid at the time, but to kind of now understand as an adult what that day meant and what it still means to that whole Hendrick organization was pretty cool. So really good. And there's so many memories we could go through all day, but those are two really good ones. We're it's going to take a time out here on NASCAR Coast to Coast and welcome in Chris Wright to talk all things ARCA and trucks and much more coming up next here on NASCAR Coast to Coast on Motor Racing Network.
For three decades, Racing Electronics has been the number one choice for scanners, headsets, and all race day communications needs. Racing Electronics provides the ultimate fan experience for the ultimate NASCAR fan. Hear uncensored communication from every team in the race with a scanner from Racing Electronics or tune into the MRN radio broadcast. To learn more, visit RacingElectronics.com today. Be race ready, be RE equipped.
Welcome back in to NASCAR Coast to Coast here on the Motor Racing Network. As promised, joining us via phone, it is the driver this weekend in the number one Tricon Garage Toyota at Texas Motor Speedway, Chris Wright. Chris, welcome to the show, my friend. A lot has been going on this season. You've been dabbling in just about everything, but you're going to Texas Motor Speedway to run this number one truck this weekend. Just how excited are you, and how did this deal come together first off?
Yeah, I'm super, super, super excited. Toyota's really helped me out, put this deal together. It was just a conversation that kind of happened overnight. You know, I was doing the ARCA stuff, and I'm working with all the different Toyota drivers coming up through the different ranks and whatnot. So I reached out to one of the guys at Toyota, said, hey, if there's any truck races that are open, I'd love to see if I can get the opportunity to drive one of them. We got the Texas deal put together in like 2 or 3 days, just after me asking the question. So super thankful for Toyota and Tricon for giving me the opportunity to do this.
You've been to Texas Motor Speedway before with other race teams. What do you know? What do you like about that very unique and challenging mile and a half oval?
Yeah, so Texas is interesting because we always race at different times of the day. I've been there where we've raced at 12:30. I've been there where we raced at 7:30 at night. Sometimes they spray it, sometimes they don't. So it's definitely one of the most interesting mile and a halfs, if you will. I know mile and a halfs kind of get a bad rap sometimes, but I think Texas is really fun. There's a lot of grip you can move around and you got to search for it. So it's really technical in that aspect. And for some reason, I feel like it's faster than the other mile and a half in terms of average speed. So, I love kind of coming down the hill in turn one and picking up all the grip, because if you're off the line by just a little bit and don't get to the bottom, you really pay the penalty on exit, just because the grip there is so line sensitive.
Yeah, and he had a 12th place finish there a year ago. So with this opportunity with Tricon, was it safe to say this is probably one of the best trucks that you'd be in terms of challenging for a win? We know the type of talent that's been behind the wheel of that one truck over the course of the last couple of years. So now it's your seat. What are the expectations this weekend?
That's a great question. It's definitely going to be the best, the most competitive car that I've driven in NASCAR. I can say that without a doubt. The expectations, no one's really talked about that. Me, the crew chief, no one on the team have really, really talked about expectations. I was pretty fast in the simulator. So, I'd like to, I'd like to definitely be in the top 10, and if the top 5 is possible, that would just make it, unbelievable. I'd be really happy with that.
Fast in the Napa!
Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide.
The simulator, and I love to ask questions that two drivers that mentioned the simulator, what can you take from that, and how close and realistic is it compared to what you've experienced in person?
So I've definitely been in, I've done a lot of simulator time, and it's a lot closer than you think it is. Now sometimes manufacturers can miss the tire model or the track model, and that's just kind of one of those things that happens. But when it's on, it's really freaking close. I personally couldn't tell a difference. Some of the times that I've done post-race stuff, getting back from Charlotte Motor Speedway, let's say, and getting in the sim, driving the exact same way that I was on Friday night at the racetrack, doing the same lap time, same lift points, same steering inputs. You can definitely make it to be as realistic as you want it to be, but it's kind of one of those things where if you trust it, it will pay dividends for you down the road and help you out. But we were pretty good in the sim, and we were just kind of working on just trying to keep the tires under us for the long runs. The speeds there, just kind of managing the tires coming out of two is a really big thing at Texas.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that too, because as somebody who, I mean, now granted, I would never drove NASCAR, but as somebody who's driven sprint cars and things like that, there's nothing replaces that feel in the seat of your pants, right? Like, you drive kind of with your butt almost. You kind of know the feeling of what it's supposed to feel like. So the simulator, although as great as they are, they can't really replicate that, that's for sure. But let's talk about, your 2024 season, moving to Venturini Motorsports on the ARCA side of things, 38th finish at Daytona, 12th at Phoenix. How would you assess this move over to Venturini and kind of your ARCA season so far this year as somebody that's been around for a few years and now finding a home at Venturini, which we know, in the championship pedigree that they have, are some of the best cars each and every week?
Yeah, for sure. It's way, way, way too early to really talk about the start of the season with Venturini. Because Daytona is just kind of luck-based, I want to say. Kind of where are you and when are you there? Kind of like what happened with us this year with the wreck that happened. But Phoenix was okay. We made a little contact there at the end of the race, and it really screwed up our front splitter and front pan, and the front grip just kind of went away. So it's just kind of one of those rough start seasons. I don't think there's anything there's not one thing you can just point at and say, this is what we need to change, other than the luck. So I think throughout the season, as the races start ticking off, I definitely think we'll move up in the points. I expect us to, and the team expects us to, because they are, you know, some of the best cars in the ARCA field. So I'm pretty excited for the rest of the year with Venturini. And, you know, the stuff they've helped me out with a lot has been really great. You know, I picked up a few rides there at the tail end of last year, and some of those went really well. So, yeah, just excited to kind of get some more races under my belt with them, because I know at the end it's going to pay dividends for us. The more we race, is, you know, the longer we'll be climbing up in points.
I think I know the answer to this next question, but I'll let you answer it. But with the ARCA series, it's such a diverse schedule. We talk about it with short tracks and super speedways and intermediate tracks, road courses, two dirt tracks toward the end of the year. Where do you think, besides the road courses, that you'll excel here this season?
I definitely think I'll excel at the mile and a half.
Okay.
Those seem to be my favorite, and really excited for Kansas, so we get like a 6-hour test the day before. So super, super excited about that. I've never tested on a mile and a half before in my life. I've just had the 20-minute practices that NASCAR gives us. So we're really thankful for an actual test session. And I'm also really excited about the dirt. I've never been this excited about going dirt racing in my life, but, you know, I know there's a lot of kids that haven't driven these big cars on dirt, and I've had, you know, more opportunities than most of the ARCA field to drive a big stock car on dirt. So excited about that, and excited to get to two new dirt tracks, because I've never been to either one of them.
It's going to be exciting for sure, and you talked about some of your favorite racetracks, including the mile and a half, but let's talk about the road courses. I don't know if a lot of people know, but your career kind of started running road courses, whether it was IMSA, even some open wheel stuff back early in your career. What comes to mind now is seeing what Connor Zilich is doing, kind of where his career's kind of started more on the sports car side. Now he's coming over to NASCAR. How critical was those experiences for you being a road racer when you now come over to this side of things and, you know, translate some of what you've learned in terms of the driving mechanics of it and things like that, that have helped you kind of excel at this level?
Yeah, I definitely think the familiarity with knowing kind of what to do at a road course is the biggest help. You know, when I show up to a road course with an Xfinity car or a truck or an ARCA car, you know, because a lot of these drivers are fish out of water when they show up to road courses. And I think it's just like a peace of mind thing. And I know that nothing that's going to happen that's in my control is going to be a surprise, because I've seen everything on a road course. You know, so it's like a comfort zone for me. But, in terms of translating, you know, that was kind of one of the biggest surprises when I started doing the NASCAR stuff, is nothing translated except for knowing how to put your racing shoes on and a helmet and everything. the NASCAR world is very, very, very different than the road course world, especially the ovals. It's everything's different. The driving style, I could go on and on. I tell people, you know, the difference between road course racing and the difference between oval racing is the difference between hockey and football. You know, they're almost like two different sports. So I think NASCAR is really cool in that aspect. You know, you have all the sports car and formula car guys that can kind of live or coexist with one another. Like, you'll see drivers, IndyCar drivers, go race 24 hours of Le Mans in a sports car, or a sports car driver hop into an IndyCar or Formula One or whatever it might be. And a lot of the racing series can kind of shift drivers around, and everything transfers relatively well. The NASCAR stuff is very different. You know, I look at what SVG's done with the Trackhouse stuff, and the win in Chicago was unbelievable. But I think one of the biggest things that helped him out that weekend was being on a street course, because it's a very different – people think street courses and road courses are the same, but when you're looking through a corner on a street course, you're looking at barriers and you can't see through the corner like you would at whatever road course you might have. So I think his comfort level with just knowing he won't be able to see the other side of the corner and has been doing it for so many years, so many different weekends, really helped him get that win in Chicago last year. And I do think there's going to be a little bit of learning curve with the oval stuff. And because it's just, it's very, very different to just go left. Very different.
My final question for you wants to go back to when you first came into this side of the sport in the ARCA series and in NASCAR. And that was right in the middle of the 2020 season with the pandemic happening. How difficult was it to make that transition? You mentioned a little bit ago, you know, you've had very limited practice at a lot of these racetracks. In 2020, you didn't have any practice at a lot of these racetracks, having to come in, never seeing the place before. How difficult was that coming to this side for the first time during that time period?
Yeah, I definitely think I hit the nail on the head with coming into the sport at the worst time possible. But no, like the biggest thing in racing for a lot of people, and you know, you hear it throughout the garage, is just managing your expectations, right? Like what is reasonable with the, I guess, differences in the equation? You know, what kind of car, what team are you with? Who's driving it? How familiar are you with the track? And just, you know, you do kind of racing math and it spits out, you know, a reasonable finishing position. So our main goal in the 2020-2021 season, because I haven't ever been to these racetracks before, was just kind of, all right, first stage, we're going to learn the racetrack. Second stage, we're going to see where we're at. Third stage, let's go racing. So that was kind of our game plan, a rough game plan for the 2020 and 21 season.
So you've been kind of a journeyman in the sport, you know, over the last couple of years, and now with this ARC opportunity and getting truck rides and things like that, I've seen you all over the place when it comes to NASCAR racing over the last couple of years. What does the future look like? Like, where do you want to be after this year? Full-time opportunities in a series, things like that? Because it feels like, I know because of 2020 and how difficult it was, you've almost had to piecemeal kind of your schedule every year, but where do you see maybe the future looking like for you? Where do you want to be, let's say, after this year's over?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know yet. We haven't started talking about next year yet. So I guess what I would really enjoy doing would be, you know, either it doesn't have to be full time, but maybe just, you know, a 10 to 15 race schedule, but quality weekends, you know, like driving, you know, 10 to 15 races for a Tricon or a Gibbs or, you know, any of the top Toyota teams would be great, you know, and if a full season opportunity comes out of it, you know, that would be better than, you know, 10 to 15 races, but 10 to 15 races would be a really great start.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something to look forward to for sure. And I know you're off to a great start here this year in 2024. Before we let you go, I know you an avid golfer, I've heard through the rumor mill. It is Masters week. So what do you think? Because you're probably already better than I was. You were on, what, IMG and Robert Morris's golf team. So, I mean, like, what do you think about the Masters week? Got a favorite?
Oh, I mean, I can't say anybody but Tiger Woods, right? I'm a big Tiger guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a child of the whole Tiger fever back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So, you know, he's always my favorite when he's on the entry list. You know, I mean, I'll tell you what, I was in a hotel room in the United Kingdom when I saw him win in 2019. And that was like the coolest thing. I was so happy that he came back and won the Masters, you know, when everyone was doubting him, you know, so just having him in the field is, it's really cool for me. It's like having my my hometown team in the Super Bowl or World Series or something.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm right there with you. Tiger was my hero as a kid, so seeing him continue to play is awesome. You still get to play much often now, or is racing pretty much taking over your life?
Yeah, I got to play a little bit last year. This year, it's going to be hit or miss. But if I get out 15 times, 20 times, I'll be very, very happy.
Amen. Amen to that. As much as I can play, the better. Well, hey, Chris, I appreciate you joining us on the show, man. Best of luck to the rest of the season. Great job so far this year. And Kyle and I will actually both be in Texas, so looking forward to catching up with you before Friday night's race.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Absolutely. Chris Wright, driver of the number one Tricon Toyota this weekend at Texas Motor Speedway, the SpeedyCash.com 250 Friday night at Texas Motor Speedway. Coming up next, some news and notes and the schedule. Busy weekend and short track racing. That's all next here on Coast to Coast on the Motor Racing Network.
For three decades, Racing Electronics has been the number one choice for scanners, headsets, and all race day communications needs. Racing Electronics provides the ultimate fan experience for the ultimate NASCAR fan. Hear uncensored communication from every team in the race with a scanner from Racing Electronics, or tune into the MRN radio broadcast. To learn more, visit RacingElectronics.com today. Be race ready, be RE equipped.
Guys who are rolling around from trucks to ARCA, and obviously Chris is taking part in some late model races as well. We've got plenty of racing coming up this week, and we'll start with some news and notes. We have the Cars Tour back in action, of course, this weekend at New River All-American Speedway. It was the rain-out date, makeup date from back in March. Dale Jr. says, I'm going to go throw on the fire suit once again. How much bigger is this event now that Dale Jr. is going to strap back in a late model stock for the first time this season?
It's huge. We see what happens when he shows up at these late model events across the country. We saw it earlier this year in Florence at the Icebreaker, and a great crowd, a great field of cars. I expect the same here this week. I mean, whenever Dale Earnhardt Jr. is at the racetrack, you know, people are interested, no matter the series. And fortunately here, it's a series that he, you know, co-owns and is a partner in, and he gets to play here this coming Saturday night.
Sundrop back on the car, also bringing with him one of his junior motorsports drivers, Sammy Smith, back to the late model stock ring. So a two-car effort. It'll be three with Carson Quappel running in that race as a full-time driver. So a three-car JRM effort coming up this weekend at New River All-American Speedway. Some other news from the weekend. Shout out to our Danny Edwards and Greg Edwards, the Edwards brothers. I don't think they're related, but winning at the Langley opener at the site of the Hampton Heat that we're going to talk about later on this year. Langley Speedway has been a long-time NASCAR Advance Auto Parts Weekly Series racetrack, and they kicked off the season with twin feature wins over the weekend. And the Alan Turner Pro Late Models. We talk about late model stocks and super late models, but not a whole lot about pro late models. But Alan Turner Pro Late Models at Five Flag Speedways have been kind of the staple when it comes to pro late model racing. And shout out to the Road to the One Snowflake 100 kind of season begins with Seth Christensen winning the opener. First time he's really won a pro late model race since 2023 Alabama. But Kyle, what is it about the Alan Turner Pro Late Models that kind of sets themselves apart from maybe some other pro late model series?
Great competition, deep fields. We see it every year with the Snowflake 100. I mean, there's 55, 60, 70 cars sometimes that enter, and a lot of those drivers, obviously regulars at the Five Flag Speedway, whenever they open up their gates, it has always been one of the top tier divisions in the Southeast. Like you mentioned, they run at a number of other racetracks, but I feel like, you know, their home base for a weekly level, for the most part, is at Five Flag Speedway there in Pensacola, Florida. Snowflake 100, one of my favorite events of the year. Usually when it doesn't get rain delayed and they don't have to run it at 3 o'clock in the morning like they did a few years ago. But a lot of great talent that we talk about on the national series of NASCAR have come from pro late models here in the last decade.
That is true. And a big feeding ground down there is Five Flag Speedway. Coming up this weekend, Kyle, we talked about just for a moment, but is it Carson Quappel versus Brendan Queen for the Cars Tour race at New River All-American Speedway, or could we throw in somebody else's name to the hat here on Saturday when they go racing on Flow Racing?
Nah, my guess it's between those two. I mean, you never know. It's, you know, we're seeing, you know, 20 plus cars show up for these events, but I'm guessing it's probably between those two when it comes to the checker flag.
Probably a smart bet, but I will say, keep an eye on Dale Jr. If they get that car rolling, he could find himself.
Yeah, that's true.
He's done it before. Let's talk Smart Tour back in action, I guess, for the final time until they kind of have their 3-week break or so until the end of May. The Hickory 100 at Hickory, of course, a legendary racetrack each and every year. Carson Lofton, a 9-point lead, though. The championship is tight over Luke Baldwin and 20-point lead over Ryan Newman. Again, can Carson go 4-for-6, or is this maybe a Bobby Labonte can finally get a win? Unfortunately, lost his father this past week, but can he win one for old Bob here this week?
That would be fitting for somebody that cut his teeth in the old Busch Series at Hickory Motor Speedway back in the late 80s and early 90s. So we'll see if Bobby can go back there in an open wheel car here, part of the Smart Tour, and perhaps get a win. But Carson Lofton will be tough. He has momentum on his side right now. Such a great start to the year. Luke Baldwin can strike at any time, no matter where he goes. Such a talent, whether it be up here in the Northeast or down here in the early part of the season on the Smart Tour. And you're right, they get a little bit of a breather here for some of them. Others will be, you know, at Bowman Gray Stadium on Saturday nights. Others will come back up here in the Northeast. Obviously, the Stafford Spring Sizzler right around the corner, and some of the other big regional series up here in New England about to take place as well to kind of open up the spring season up here.
Yeah, the floodgates about to open up in New England. Some other racing this weekend, of course, ASA Southern Super Series back in action at Montgomery. Weekly action for the NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series at Florence, Langley, South Boston. And, of course, the American-Canadian Tour opens up its series with a dual event with the Pro All-Star Super Series, 4th Annual Northeast Classic up at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, the Magic Mile, $5,500 to win for the ACT Tour coming up this weekend on Saturday, 50-lapper for the Pass Series as well, Tour-type mods, 604 mods, you name it. That is a huge weekend up there at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, and it's going to be one to watch for sure. Kyle, with all that being said, what happened last week, kind of newsmakers this week, who is K-Rick's driver of the week this week?
I'm going to pick somebody that I saw do well, and that is Derek Griffith. You know, racing Mother Nature, racing the competition, racing a wet racetrack and the cold weather. Had a good run to open the year up at the Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park on Saturday. Survived a lot of different elements in trying to get there, and now we'll try to carry that into the New Hampshire Motor Speedway this weekend. So I'm going to go with Derek Griffith on his win at the Icebreaker just a couple of days ago.
Pat on the back, Derek Griffith. Nice job so far in 2024. Thank you, Kyle, for your driver of the week. And with that, we cap our final show, at least on my end, doing this here at 555 MRN Drive. It has been an incredible run for the Motor Racing Network here in this facility, now being shared with Racing Electronics. We relinquish that as we make our new home at the new NASCAR Productions facility just down the road here in Concord, North Carolina. Kyle, we've had a lot of good times in here. You've had plenty of good times doing this show for well over a decade. This is bittersweet. We're going to a better place, but man, if these walls could talk, huh?
You have no idea. I was there when Motor Racing Network opened that building in October of 2007. And was there, like you mentioned, for more than a decade before coming back up here to New England. And NASCAR Coast to Coast was founded in the room in which you sit right now with Buddy Long and myself about, 10 or 11 years ago now. And we've been talking short track racing ever since. And a lot of other shows have come out of that studio as well. Steve Post does a lot of his content from out of there with Wing Nation. A lot of our Motor Racing Network podcasts come out of there. And so, kind of a bittersweet moment here as we kind of close things up for the final time. Shut the lights off on the way out.
I will, indeed. It's been a great run, but new things are ahead. A new look will be next week here on NASCAR Coast to Coast, so stick around for that. For our producer, Pat Jaggers, that is Kyle Rickey. My name is Chris Wilner. Have a wonderful week of short track racing, and thanks for tuning in to NASCAR Coast to Coast here on MRN. We'll see you next week.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy in. Four tires, Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Money stop here for Ryan Blaney. Four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.